Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week and more, I'm looking for one or two great volunteers who will help me categorize the podcasts into categories by Parsha and also by the member of the faculty who recorded the podcast. As you can see now on the podcast website, I've been doing this for a while now, but I have over 200 back episodes of the podcast that I would also like to categorize. Once this is done, it will enable you, our listeners, to look up, for instance, all the different podcasts that we've recorded on the Lech Lecha Parsha, and make it easy to do to find a podcast when you're looking for one. So if you're interested in helping me out, this is all done via the web. We're using WordPress. If you feel savvy and comfortable with the web, then you won't have any problem. If you're interested in helping me out, then please send me an email at web@kluger.com, KLUGER.com. Thanks very much for your offer to help out. This week, Rabbi Daniel Andes, the Rosh HaYeshiva and director of the Pardes Institute, presents a podcast on Emor. And now, Rabbi Daniel Andes.
Thank you, Larry. This week's parsha, Parshat Emor, speaks directly to the big mitzvah that we're involved in right after Passover, and that's the mitzvah of counting the Omer. Now, what does counting the Omer mean? What's the Omer? The Omer itself is this sheaf that is waved and then is made into a sacrifice that is brought to the temple. And it says in this week's parasha of Emor, Leviticus 23 verse 11, and he shall wave, and let's do the Hebrew. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath, the priests shall wave it. You need many things to be said on this verse, but the main thing is that after a whole ceremony of going out, and this is Mimacharat Shabbat, the morrow after the Sabbath, which is understood by the sages to mean after the first day of the holiday of Pesach. So it's not the night of the Seder. It is the next night that the sheaf is taken, it's waved. Vasitem biyom hanifchem et omer keves tamim ben shenatol alol Hashem, and the day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a he lamb without blemish of the first year for a burnt offering unto the Lord. And the meal offering thereof shall be 2/10 parts of an ephah, it's not a large amount, a fine flour mixed with oil, an offering made by fire unto the Lord for a sweet savor, and the drink offering thereof shall be of wine, a fourth part of a hin. To sum it up, and there's other sacrifices, the first sheaf of the new crop is taken. Now, this new crop is the barley crop, and that is what is taken. And that becomes a sacrifice, an offering to the Mikdash, participation in the waving, and the consumption by the Kohen, by the priest, and that's barley. At that point, then there's attending sacrifices. It says in verse 15, "Usfartem lachem imacharat haShabbat miyom haviyachem et haOmer haTnufa sheva shabtot mimot tiyena." And you shall count unto you. Meaning, you should do the counting from the morrow after the day of rest. That's that Shabbat idea, which means the first day, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the waving. That's the Omer. 7 weeks shall there be complete. And the verse continues, "Ad mimacharat haShabbat haShvi'i tisbru 50 yom, v'kravtem mincha chadasha l'Adonai." even unto the morrow after the seventh week shall ye number 50 days, and ye shall present a new meal offering unto the Lord. And there's a whole description of the meal offering, description of attendant korbanot. This 50 days, or in the 50th day, is the holiday we call Shavuot. It was brought, and those first fruits of that day is brought. In fact, that's the verse. V'moshvoteichem taviu lechem tenufa shetayim shnei esronim solot tiyena chametz tiyafena bikurim lashem. You shall bring out of your dwellings two wave loaves. This is really important. Two wave loaves of two-tenths parts of an ephah. They shall be a fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven for first fruits unto the Lord. They're baked with leaven. The loaves were not offered on the altar, on the mizbeach. They were waved. They belonged to the priest. And these loaves are the loaves of chitim, of wheat. So you begin this whole process, this 50-day process, with the waving of a loaf, waving of a sheaf, which is of barley. And then later on, barley ripens faster and comes to fruition faster than wheat. And then later on, at the end of this process, it'll be wheat. And during this time, you count these days. There's a disagreement amongst the authorities of whether or not the counting is dependent upon the sacrifices. If it's dependent upon the sacrifices, though today we have no, because you're counting really from one sacrifice to another. So if it's dependent on the sacrifice, in a sense, there's no mitzvah, bizman is that, there's no mitzvah today to do so. But we continue to do so as a rabbinic remembrance of what took place. However, Maimonides feels that this mitzvah of counting is indeed a independent mitzvah, and we do make this counting even if the wavings are not there at this present time, even if the barley and the wheat are not offered in the way that has been described, and they still exist, and therefore still exists as we would call a mitzvah deoraita, a mitzvah from the Torah, and that is Maimonides' opinion, which is a dominant opinion. This mitzvah of counting, which is what I want to go to today, is the mitzvah which moves us from one period to the other, really from the barley to the chitim, from the barley to the wheat, from Pesach to Shavuot. And it involves two forms, many are familiar, two forms of a mitzvah. You count both weeks and days, 7 weeks, 50 days, or until the 50th day. You're counting both weeks and days, and that's why when you hit, as we did when I'm doing this recording, when you hit the 12th day, we said, you know, we say the bracha to count, and we say that it's 12 days, which is 1 week and 5 days, so that we count both days and weeks at the same time. It's a mitzvah on the individual, in the sense that lachem, everyone is supposed to count, given the fact that the calendar is set, even today's set calendar is set by the rabbis, so it has a communal aspect, indeed a Sanhedrin aspect. And when the Sanhedrin, the high court, was more involved and time was more fluid, or the counting of time, I should say, was more fluid, it was really dependent upon them. Even if there was only three members of the Sanhedrin that could decide on it, they had the name of the Sanhedrin in making their stamp of authority, and that became the law. We do count at night, and that's when we made the make the blessing. If we forget, we still can count the next day, which is the same day, the day part of that counting, and it's felt that you have still counted. If you miss a day, then you've missed really the whole thing, and that you can no longer make a blessing. You should continue to count, because it's supposed to be 7 perfect weeks, Sheva Shabtot Tamimot, perfect and complete weeks. So there's always a lot of tension, almost even anxiety, about getting this right. And it's actually a lot of fun. In our house, my wife, Cheryl, puts up notices everywhere. Count the Omer, remember to count little notices. And so we remember. Indeed, wherever we are, as soon as we remember, the whole family gets together and we immediately count. It's a mitzvah that when you fulfill it in the end, it feels good. Now, there's a whole other dimension, and not speaking about tonight, is that the observance of certain aveglut, of certain mourning for national calamities that took place at this time, but it took place during this period of time, but that's not my topic for tonight. And continue this topic of counting, which involves yourself, the individual, and the community. Do it lochem. But lochem means something else. Lochem means that you, not only that you shall count, it's lochem, it's really for you. And this is the notion of the mystical meaning of what lochem means. Yisvartem lochem, you should count for yourself. That the notion of the counting and the movement from the Exodus to the giving of Torah at Sinai, which what Shavuot commemorates, is this notion of moving from freedom, but moving towards responsibility. The notion of freedom is not this of anarchy. You have a revolution in Egypt. Will it be anarchic afterwards? Will it be repressive afterwards? We say no. We say that we embody within ourselves, we internalize this Torah that will be given to us, and the commemoration of it is on Shavuot, and we do so, therefore, counting towards that time, recognizing that if we can hold it together, if we can prove ourselves, we've gone pretty far. The mystics take that a step further. They refer to it not so much as, although there are echoes of that, freedom to the notion of responsibility, but they say a little bit differently. They talk about of tahara and takana, of self-improvement and communal improvement, and tahara, self and communal purification. And indeed, there are charts, for those who are even more overtly Kabbalistic, that take the seven of the sefirot, which are the numbers of counting that we do about the manifestations of God, as taught in Jewish mysticism, and take those seven manifestations, 7 out of 10, take the lower seven, and see how each day has some sort of interplay of 7 against 7, make a chart of 7 across and 7 down, and each one on the grid has that aspect in order to aid in the notion of how each day can be meaningful. The idea is, can we become ready and can we become fit for the acceptance of the Torah? This is how we do it. And therefore, the Torah was not given to Israel immediately upon their exodus from Egypt. They needed to really have, and we have in used as a metaphor from the legal literature, the notion of counting 7 clean days. And by clean, I put in quotation marks, 7 pure days, even that's a quotation mark, 7 days of transformational days, 7 days which lead towards integration, 7 times 7, to bring us to this notion of being fit and complete in order, and I'm going back to the notion of responsibility, in order to accept this responsibility and total transformation of Torah. So sphere is between going from barley to wheat. The barley harvest is always considered within Jewish tradition, barley, as essentially an animal field, animal feed. Animals eat barley. Now, I'm not taken away from anyone who puts barley in their chalons. I'd be very happy to come to your home and have your barley chalent, although I do have a slight allergy to barley. But a good barley chalent, I understand. The barley kind of gives that roughage. It soaks up the water. There's a lot to it. But barley is considered to be, nonetheless, the lowest part. And it's part, mystically, it's part of the personage that needs to be fed. We need to feed our animal appetite. And needs to be offered sacrificially. That's why we wave it. We need to know our animal part. We are not a religion that gets rid of our animal needs, and in general, we don't denigrate those animal needs because we know that they are real, but we feel that the animal needs also need to be expressed, but they also need to be transcended and sanctified. So we begin with ma'achal behema. We begin with counting from the barley part. Consider revolution. Revolution has to do with very bodily things. People want to be free. People don't want to be constricted. People want jobs. People want food. People don't want to be persecuted. Those elements are very basic elements. And by basic, I don't necessarily mean base. They are basic notions. Yes, they can have a philosophic spin to them. But the more you consider it, the more you see that on the street, on the barricade, in the leaving of Egypt, people just want a better life. And that's where it begins. But now we start the countdown to wheat. And wheat is understood as the finest of the grains. And here it's supposed to be the finest of the wheat, that we create the finest of the flour from the wheat, the most purely processed, developed, baked. The smell should be fantastic. The aesthetic appeal should be terrific. And this is a different type of offering. It's a different type of bringing. It's a completion of a person. And here, it's metaphorically understood by the mystics as moving towards the completion of the personality and moving from the animal basis to really what is has been the basic food of a good part of humanity, and certainly the part of humanity that the Jewish people have been part of, which is wheat. We're careful very much about wheat. We're careful about blessing. We're careful about barley too, but wheat becomes that's the challah on Shabbat. That becomes the loaves on the Sabbath day. There's something special. Therefore, it needs to have that internal. For us, it's a metaphor of the internal process which is taking part as we move up that chart of 7 times 7. There's a question that we could ask at this point. It's interesting that it connects the barley to the wheat. One can ask the question, and the question is that's kind of interesting that actually the connection is a little off from both sides. On one side, it's a little off, is that we don't start the counting from Seder night. Those of you who are in the diaspora and observe two Sedarim, you have two Seders, you know that you start the counting on the second Seder, but that's really the second night of Passover. And so therefore, that's the same both in Israel and in the diaspora, is that we count on that second night. So the question on one side is, why don't we start on that first night of Exodus? And the second question is from the other side. We count 49 days. We really don't count the 50th. We count until the 50th. It's the 50th when we have Shavuot. Why not count into the 50th and connect them completely? And so I think there's the answer for both. There's an individual answer for both that I think is extraordinarily important. The answer for the first is, why don't we begin on that first night? And why is it Mimacharata Shabbat, you know, the day after that day of rest, which is the first night and day of Passover? Why don't we begin then? Because, indeed, the night and day of Exodus from Egypt is itself a perfect time. It's a time of perfection. There is that moment in revolution, even though I emphasize the animalistic elements, there is that moment in revolution in which all things are possible, in which we are totally optimistic, in which there is a euphoria and perfection that we cannot describe, that we hardly ever experience. And of course, the purpose of that Seder night is to experience. Given that fact, we don't need any progression. We don't need at that moment to be metaher, metakein, to purify ourselves and to repair ourselves. That's not the moment. We can celebrate that revolutionary moment of Exodus and that spiritual euphoria that comes with it on the highest level. It's Mimacharat HaShabbat. It's on the day after, the morning after the party, the morning after the revolution, the morning after the first day of Pesach. It's then Mimacharat HaShabbat, or the night following in Jewish tradition, when that whole day is finished, and when Havdalah has been made, or at least the first day, the real day has finished, of the holiday, of that sanctified time of the holiday. It's then when you really know that you really have a big task in front of you, that these whole animal desires need to be fulfilled, but they also need to be transcended. They need to be expressed, and they need to be satiated, but they also need to be transformed. It's then you begin the counting, and therefore it necessarily begins this process of tara and takana, process of purification, a process of repair, of tikkun, must start on mimacharata Shabbat, from that time after the resting time, from the perfection time. That's when it starts, that's when the work begins. What about on the other side? Why don't we count into the 50th day from a mystical perception? Well, from the mystical perception, we have a case of the individual who was our perfect example, our best example. Well, I'll say perfect example. Our perfect example of those who strove to the highest possible peak of knowledge, of understanding, of perfection. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Moses, our teacher. And Moses, according to Jewish tradition, was the person who was the best exemplar of that. Now, in mystical tradition, we say there are Nun Sha'arei Bina. There are 50 gates of understanding. And the 50 gates of understanding are one after the other. Understanding implies within it the sacred aspect, the integrated aspect of a personality, every possible thing that raises a person up. And the tradition regarding Moshe is that of those 50 gates of understanding, Moshe, Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher, Moshe that gave us the Torah from God, our tradition about Moshe is that he reached the 49th, did not reach the 50th, didn't make the 50th. You have here an exemplar within Judaism of the notion of striving to the heights, but humility is that everyone human, even Moshe, doesn't make and doesn't enter the 50th gate of understanding. And so we have the same thing here. We have a striving of 49. We have a striving of going from gate to gate of understanding, of perfection, of changing ourselves. But there's still a notion that nonetheless, the 50th gate, in a sense, is not yet there for us. That's our humility. We will celebrate the 50th gate. We celebrate with the wheat. We celebrate with the wheat loaves, with this processing of ourselves and transformation of ourselves. And if we make it through 2 gates, and we make it through 10 gates, we make it through, 30 gates, and if we make it through 49 gates, this is our goal. And we have the goal, paradoxically, of the 50th, but we know humbly that we might not make this. So in the counting of the Omer, both as we do it individually, both as we do it communally, as we do it at the night, if we forget, we do it during the day, as we count the days and we count the weeks, we count on ourselves to try to make it really from barley, machal behema, the food of beasts, to chitim, to wheat, the machal adam, the food of people, and for that transformation. Thank you, and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Landes. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from...